Blog Talk Radio.
Again, welcome to another edition of the Just the Freedom is Faith. My name is Arlie Gordon of Unity Design and the National Black Teen Empowerment Expo, and it is my mission to prove that we have all the resources necessary to improve the quality of living and learning for today's young generation. This show is produced by the prominent educator and author Leslie Gist Etheridge, and serves as a weekly live online discussion to celebrate the African-American experience by honoring all the people, past and present, black and white, who are, through faith and focus, persevering in preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, the skilled trades, and the humanities. As always, I want to thank you for joining us tonight and welcome you to be a part of our discussion. You may feel free to call in with your comments to 347-324-5552. That's 347-324-5552. And this evening we have with us a very special guest, Robert Lett, who is a descendant of one of our most well-known ancestors, mathematician and scientist Benjamin Banneker. And Mr. Lett, are you on the line with us?
I certainly am.
Well, thank you for joining us. And I'm looking at the notes, and I encourage our listeners who have access to the internet to visit blogtalkradio.com/ The Antique E Show. And there are some incredible photos of Benjamin Banneker's family. And we're going to talk with Mr. Lett more about the legacy of Benjamin Banneker and his family's migration, the black settlers, to the Northwest Territory. Firstly, Mr. Lett, I'd like to welcome you to tonight's show. Thank you for being with us and sharing with us this wonderful story.
Well, I'm happy to be with you, and I hope everyone will soon realize how wonderful all of our stories are, because what began with me was just a personal story of my family has bridged into a network of just incredible African-American stories.
Well, and that's true. And we have such a wonderful legacy that goes too broadly unknown or not celebrated enough. And I think that's the premise for this show, is, again, to be bringing our history to light at life today. And to, in that progress, if you will, uplift our people and uplift our children. And so, again, I'm very grateful that you could join us. And I was taking a look at the notes online, and tell us about the Michigan connection. We mentioned Northwest Territory, but some of the photos reference Michigan's black settlers. And this is an amazing story personally for me, because I recall taking a camping trip to the middle of nowhere in the state of Michigan and running into a whole community of black people. And I thought I was in outer space almost, because it was so profound for me to find these black folk in the rural settings of mid-Michigan, you know, knowing that most of us are in Detroit. So share a little bit with us about the Michigan connection, and then we can go on and talk about the Northwest Territory, if you'd be so kind.
Okay, well, they got to Michigan. These families began in Maryland and Virginia, by and large, and they, with the oncoming of the tightening of the laws of slavery, of the political climate of that day being such that it was, they felt in jeopardy. These were early free families where maybe one generation or only one member had been tied to slavery. They were free, and they said Ohio is where to go. Well, they moved to Ohio, which was an early free state, and they settled there. Well, as all families do, they, and it seems to be a trait of our African-American culture, once we become dominant in one area as a group, people decide they want to move on. Well, before the Civil War, in the 1860s, these folks sold property in Ohio and began homesteading property in Michigan and in mid and northern Michigan. These
now,
are
what
the families
do we mean by homesteading? What do we mean by homesteading? Just educate me, if not our listeners.
Okay, well, the government at that time did not have a lot of money to induce people to move, but they had lots of land that needed to be settled.
Right.
And the government made plots of land, acreage available, if you were willing to move onto that property and to make improvements. Build a structure, and then start improving on that property by creating farmland.
So they actually got this land for free, and all they had to do was build upon it and be upstanding taxpayers in the community.
Absolutely. But uniquely, okay, many of these people came, as many people actually were in those days. Unfortunately, we only get the message via Hollywood and via popular misconception that African-American people were simply slaves and laborers. Well, these people were brick masons, where they knew how to not just lay the bricks, but how to make the bricks, how to fire them. They were men who knew how to cut lumber. They knew how to change that raw trees into planks and boards.
Wow.
They were leather craftsmen. So these men moved not simply able to perform physical labor, but also to offer the skill of that day. And these
skilled trades. Mm-hmm.
And they were ironically, what you were saying about suddenly finding that you're in the middle of Michigan, probably near Remus, Michigan, or Mount Pleasant, in those areas.
I was near White Cloud, Baldwin area, which is, I believe, a little north of Grand Rapids.
Okay. Well, these people were there, and they were among the earliest settlers in that area. Frequently today,
right,
my relatives who are up in Michigan tell me they do public forums and public speaking, and they're asked frequently by their white neighbors, well, what was it like when your family came here and they were the first black people here? Were they really discriminated against? And they take exception to that question, saying, oh, no, you misunderstand. We were the first people in this area. We settled the area, and then the white settlers came into the area.
Mm.
And I think that's a perception that we largely don't have as African Americans of things that we contributed to American history.
That's right, to society.
Right.
And we know that, again, not all of us were simply freed slaves. We were skilled tradespeople. We know that we weren't necessarily the second ones in the neighborhood, but the ones who actually built communities in Ohio and Michigan. And continue, Mr. Led.
Well, I think the other thing I would like to really put across to this audience is the fact that our early African-American settlers, I feel they had an incredible commitment and faith in God, and that there was something better to be gained by their hard work. My early family, which tracks back to the marriage of Samuel Lett to Jemima Banneker. You know, Jemima was the daughter, granddaughter, of Molly Walsh, who was a white Englishwoman who came to America as an indentured servant. And then when she came, she served her indebtedness, got a little bit of money, was indeed courageous because she settled on the Maryland wilderness and bought a small farm. After several years of trying to farm by herself, she gave in to the conventions of the day and purchased two slaves. Now, I find it's hard to believe that here you have a woman in purchasing two slaves and then trying to induce them to work for her. Now, I think that's probably the epitome of women's liberation. Well, she got two slaves. One she couldn't get to work because he was lazy, and the other one kept telling her what she should do and how she should farm and how she should work. This gentleman's name was Banica, and Banica was from Senegal, Africa. And there's, we've not been able to document this, but of course, we know that his name indicates that he came from the royal line of people in Senegal of that day. Molly and Banica eventually married, or Molly freed them, both these men, and she married Banica, and their daughter, Mary, she in turn, born free, married a former slave who ironically took her surname, which was Banica or Banicky, taken from her father's African name, Banica. So that's where the name Banneker comes from. So the name Banneker passed on. So Robert and Mary Banneker were the parents of Benjamin Banneker and my fourth great grandmother, Jemima Banneker. And that is my that's my connection to Benjamin Banneker.
Well, you are indeed royalty. I know that Benjamin Banneker was one of my inspirations in grade school. I think I did had to be third or fourth grade, and I did a book report on him. And while I don't remember all the details, some 40 years later, I was very proud of Benjamin Banneker and his achievements. And let's briefly, if we could, Robert, share with some of our listeners a little bit more about the legacy and the life of Benjamin Banneker in terms of his contributions to society and this country.
Well, Benjamin Banneker was, for the large part, he was a self-taught mathematician and astronomer. Mm-hmm. He did do some basic elementary education with a Quaker teacher. Then he, very keen, went on to manage his parents' farm. His father died while he was in his 20s, so he took on the farming, but also pursued his own independent studies.
And where was he raised? He was raised in Michigan as well?
No, he was raised in Maryland. He was born in outside of, what is now Ola, Maryland, outside of Baltimore.
Okay.
And I might interject at this time, his homestead is now the site of the Benjamin Banneker Park and Museum. And there's a nature walk, and that land where that park stands today is actually part of the old Banneker homestead.
Wow. Fascinating. And this is in Maryland, right? What part of Maryland again?
It's in Ola, Maryland, just outside of Baltimore.
Okay, great.
He went on to do great work as an astronomer, as a surveyor. He helped survey Washington, D.C. when it was just known as the District of Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
I think even more fascinating to me is that between 1792 and 1797, he published a series of 5 almanacs.
Wow.
And in those almanacs, he talked about the beginning of the seasons, the tides, best time to plant, best time to harvest. He put in such things as the history of the of bees and their mating and breeding cycles. He did those types of things, put in recipes.
Wow. Are these almanacs still in publication today? Are they still accessible either in print or online?
No, they're not, but there is a copy of them in the National Archives.
Okay.
There's a real move afoot today to really look at Benjamin Banneker because I believe he was really overlooked.
That's right.
very overlooked, because in 1791, he actually penned a letter to Secretary of State Thomas Jefferson asking him to use his influence to address the situation of slavery in America.
Wow.
So, in his own time, he became the poster child, if you will, of abolition, because here was a man who dispelled the myths of African Americans not being having mental capabilities or abilities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that he dared to speak out in a very clever and appropriate way.
Wow, that's fascinating. And if I'm not mistaken, and this sort of goes under the radar too, but a lot of our people as skilled trades men, and I don't want to leave our woman out, actually helped to build the White House.
Absolutely.
And I just want to know, is there any connection between Benjamin Banneker and that topic?
No, but I do know that there is a similarity between the construction of downtown Washington, D.C., ironically, and Detroit, other than the fact that Benjamin Banneker was part of the survey team. I can't really give any more credibility to that.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some more of the achievements of Benjamin Banneker.
Well, I think the incredible achievements that he gave to us is the fact that the decorum in which he presented himself. He was always presented as being a very gentle man,
mm-hmm.
a man who addressed all people, those in opposition to him and those who supported him, in very similar manner. He was quiet and he was confident in what...
And competent, absolutely. And you also spoke a little bit, Robert, about the fact that he was involved in primary or elementary education. Was he actually a teacher at some point?
There's been great suggestion that he was a teacher, but basically he taught his nieces and nephews. And that early teaching that was given really revolved around the Bible and Scripture. He was a very devout man.
Wow. A man of strong faith, obviously.
Very strong faith, yeah.
What about the Northwest Territory? Now, I know that we're talking about the Mid-Atlantic, we're talking about the Midwest. Did the Bannekers actually migrate all the way from Maryland or Virginia to the Northwest Territories?
Well, we have to redefine our terms. We have to realize that in the late 1700s, early 1800s, the population of the United States was concentrated along the eastern coast.
Correct.
And the Northwest Territory, as early prescribed, really began in Ohio and branched up into Michigan.
Okay, so that is at that day and age what we would have constituted or considered to be the Northwest Territory.
Yes, yes. And ironically, what I think another Hollywood misconception is, we never see these families moving in wagon trains, of where you had people of color moving together as groups of people. And doing my family research, I have been able to find where the families such as the Normans and the Letts and the Calumet and Guy families who settled in southeastern Ohio, they also were doing business together collectively in Anne Arundel County, Maryland, Frederick County, Maryland, Baltimore, Maryland. And they also had extensions of their families that were doing similar business and work in Virginia. Now, given that era of time, it's pretty significant because we didn't have rapid transit. Everything that you traveled to was a horseback ride from 20 miles or more, which is what you could mm-hmm. cover on a hard day on horseback. So it's amazing to think that these people clustered together as families and they migrated as a group of people in support of one another.
And I love the fact that you're speaking to cooperative or collective economic empowerment in many ways. And Robert, what I'd like you to do is give us a little bit more of your story. Are you a historian? I know that you are a proud descendant of Benjamin Banneker. What is your profession?
I am a high school educator. Now I'm a high school college counselor working in a private boarding school. I do lots of community activism, volunteer work, both in support of, well, just in support of the community in general, but in particular, with particular ear to support of my African American neighborhoods here. I'm a avid researcher, more of a, my sister's a genealogist in my family, quite honestly. But before I even get into that, let me share with you my earliest recollection of any family history research or whatever was going to the Lett Settlement Families Reunion in Cambridge, Ohio.
When was this, Robert?
Oh, this is in the early 50s.
Okay. Okay.
I was young enough for my father to put me on his shoulders. There was a rush at the reunion to the end of the pergola, what we were eating under, shelter we were eating under. And my dad says, "Oh, come on, Bob. You know, they're going to, the old timer is going to tell us the history of the family."
Wow.
And we all gathered around. And, of course, the adults were there and everyone was around. And my dad lifted me onto his shoulders so I could see this old gentleman. And it was quite theatrical. The old gentleman, they had a rocking chair there, and he had his white shirt on and black suspenders and cane-type white hat, you know, that the men would wear in that era. And he leaned back, and he was, began to tell this story of how the families were in Maryland, and in suit of better opportunity, they turned their face to the setting sun and went west and arrived in Ohio. And that was the beginning. It was the first time I ever heard anything about my father's family and the migration that took place. No, because I went through the normal evolution, I think, that a lot of us went through. I experienced the early civil rights movement in Northern Kentucky and integration. That's where I was raised. My dad was a principal of an all-black high school, which I loved going to visit. Went on to experience the Black is Beautiful era of the 70s, and then studied Pan-African Studies at Cal State Los Angeles here in Los Angeles, California. And we had early awakenings, but my sister, once again, was a genealogist, and we started talking about genealogy and that type of thing, and next thing I know, I was linked in doing some wanting to know how these families lived. I was put in contact with a guy named James Lett in Kansas, a cousin, who had been in touch with a cousin, an elder cousin, in Zanesville, Ohio, right 10, 15 miles from where I was from, where I lived in Cambridge, Ohio, for a while, who had a note from a guy named George Simpson, professor at Wilberforce University, a relative who had a note that said Benjamin Banneker's sister, Jemima, married Samuel Lett.
Wow.
And that was that was in 2002.
Wow. And how did you feel? How did you feel knowing that you were in such esteemed company?
I'm not sure I felt that I was in such esteemed company, but I did wonder what impact that knowledge might have had on me at a much younger age.
And, you know, that's interesting that you bring that up, because I think there's too much of a void, or as I like to call it, a hole in the soul of too many of our younger children and even our teens. And this might even be more implicit among our teens because of the growing suicide rate among young black males. I think part of that that conversation needs to stem around the fact that our children don't understand our rich history and don't understand the significant contributions that we've made not only in this country but on a global scale. And you as an educator, I'd like you to speak to that a little bit, and I'm sure that's part of the work that you do in sharing the story of your family and legacy. Why is it so important that our young generation understands the shoulders upon which they stand and stood?
I believe it's really important that they get that sense, because I think the kids today are getting this sense of nothing is changing, particularly our students and young people in our inner city areas, because they see blighted neighborhoods, they see where our inner city schools have all become bastions of segregation once again.
That's right.
So to speak to them of change, it's hard for them to visualize, because they're coming from their experience. It's tragic, but I challenge, and I believe all of us have an opportunity, because we all have some tie to the Civil War. And I think the movie Glory was a great, scratched the surface. I mean, those men who were free men chose to put themselves in harm's way for the millions of men, African Americans, who were enslaved. I feel that, and yet so many of us have ties to slavery in the Deep South, and we have ties to soldiers who liberated those people. I think we all have a great story that we need to get out and share with our young people, because it's that hope. It was that hope given in a spiritual sense that made the slaves in many ways felt they were better Christians than were their white oppressors. And I don't want to put this on a white, black, basis, because there are millions and great stories of cooperation between the races over the generations.
That's right. But it's typically a story not of black and white, but of good and bad.
Of good and bad. But but there is a need for all of us who have within our power to give something, whether it's a pat on the back, a coaching, a tutorial, going and speaking of our experience, give it back to our young people who don't get out of those neighborhoods.
That's true. That's true. And I think that's so important. Robert, we have about 2 minutes left. Are there any last words that you'd like to share with our listeners?
I just feel so incredibly humbled to have had the opportunity to do the research and to discover the great things that many of my ancestors were able to achieve. It makes me really feel that in what I have not finished trying to accomplish, because I want to do more. I feel that I have been truly blessed to be able to discover these things. And it's not my family. These families link and they branch out to every family.
And let's keep that legacy alive. And in that light, I'd simply like to ask you this final question, if I may. Are there any books that you may be working on personally, or are there any films or events or reunions or museum that you think need to be known about and that we can help to promote on this show?
Well, I really would like to encourage people in the Midwest area to get into Cincinnati, Ohio, to participate in their Juneteenth celebration, which occurs in June every year, on the June 19th. I believe that we all need to just, and as far as working and writing, I am putting together a collection of writings similar to Profiles in Courage by John Kennedy, which are profiles in history, which really talk about family members that I'm connected to and their relatives. You know, not necessarily all my cousins, but some of them are my cousins' cousins.
Sure.
And I think that...
Well, I want to thank you for being a very special guest on the Gist of Freedom is Faith. It is through people like you who are keeping our past alive that we stand in a greater opportunity of brightening our future. Thank you, Robert, for being with us tonight, and we hope that you'll join us again as you research and discover more about your illustrious past and family. And again, I personally want to thank you for being our guest tonight.
Well, thank you.
You're very, very welcome. And to all of our listeners, thank you for being a part of another installment of the Gist of Freedom is Faith. You can catch the show every Sunday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, You can also visit the website, blogtalkradio.com/The Antique Show. I'd like to thank Leslie Jis Etheridge, who is the producer of this show. And please join us again next Sunday as we continue to celebrate the African-American experience by honoring all people, past and present, black and white, who are preserving our rich history through literature, the arts, the skilled trades, and the humanities. Good night to all. God bless.
People make the world go round. So they can help you.